to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow, and with me this time we have Thaxos.
Hey, hey.
Frost.
Hello, hello, hello.
Pinocchio.
Hello.
And our special guest this month, we have City Ren from Varang Clan right now.
Yep, that's right.
Sweet. I got it right. That's the one thing I, like, get wrong half the time. Like, ah, oh, I know who the guest is, I know what they do, what's up, cool. And then, wait, frig, where are they from? New Jersey?
It's either where, what clan are they from, or how do you pronounce that clan?
Yeah. Man. Like, I want to give mad props to, Recording Clan. I think that's how you say it. It's the,
clan?
The New Jersey guys. They're one of our most active clans on Twitter right now. They're really knocking it out, but I cannot pronounce your clan name properly to save my life.
I want to say it's like Rakordan.
Yeah, like
I don't even know.
I don't know.
I'm just going with Recording.
Yeah, but either way, mad props, guys. Awesome. But enough of my digression. Like I said, we have a sweet guest. We have City here with us. And I guess to start this off, let's just get some info about you. What got you into the Mercs?
Well, I knew about the 501st, and I was doing some research and ran into the dented helmet. And from there, I found out about the Mercs. And I think it was 2008 I started looking. And of course, we're military, so we moved. And I didn't make my kit until, let's see, till I want to say 2012. And I went to Phoenix Comic Con that year. So, and I just love the fact that the Mercs is fully armored, and definitely gave me a new project to work on. I've been costuming since I was 16 or 15.
Oh, wow.
So I've been doing costume competitions all throughout Gen Con in Chicago for anime conventions, and just coupling Star Wars with my love for sewing and being creative was definitely a step in the right direction, and now I'm just trying to be really active in promoting our, you know, our clan and everything, and getting more people interested.
Excellent.
Awesome. So, so I'm nervous because this is my first time on a podcast. So,
oh, no worries.
We don't bite much.
Much.
We do.
That's reassuring.
We do edit, so you're good.
Excellent. Yeah.
Was Phoenix the first convention that you attended once you became a
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the year that was the year I met you and Mandalore. And so, yeah, that was my first year. And then after that, I didn't go the next year and got extension because we had our second little one. So after that, thank you. After that, I started being a lot more proactive and trying to get things going. And now my husband is also a Merc, and he's part of the brigades as well. And then here, while I've been here, I've been making vests for all of my clan members, and I helped kind of jumpstart the Vegas crew. Hopefully they're still going, so before we had to move. So.
Nice.
Very good.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I love the Mercs, and I think, you know, it's a great, great group to get involved with. You know, I like the fact that I'm able to be creative and, you know, make the armor my own versus trying to fit some little cookie cutter mold that all the other clubs have.
And yeah, definitely.
Just enjoy the creativity.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, being as Star Wars has kind of been a big part of our lives, it's how my husband and I met. So we kind of share this together as well.
I mean, I guess I've been lucky in that I've only ever lived in one clan. I've never had to transfer between clans for just moving in general or moving because we're, you know, I'm with the military or with someone who's with the military. What's, like, how's that worked for you moving around while you've been in the Mercs?
It's great, actually. Coupled with the fact that I make a lot of vests for the Mercs. When I went to Celebration, I knew a heck of a lot of people, and I felt very comfortable to be able to go up and say hi to people. And I stay in touch with people from my old clan. I still talk to Hagen Norak and Kando Pax, and still good friends with them. And I still talk to the guy that's the only approved Merc in Vegas right now, trying to keep him going. And so he's, you know, he needs a little help now and then. But it means I get, whenever I go somewhere, I know a lot of people. So I'm able to just, you know, walk up and say hi. And Phoenix, the Phoenix group was closest to us when we lived in Vegas. So even then, closer than our clan, they were 5 hours and the rest of our clan was 7 hours away. So they adopted us. The Dune Sea adopted us, Shinar Vedka. Mm-hmm. And they still, all of them are really
good. I think she said that right.
I did. They kind of made us honorary members. They're really great people up there. I love that clan. I just never want to live in Phoenix.
It's a little warm, yeah.
Just slightly.
Yeah.
So.
So you're currently the Clan Ruzalor, actually, for V-Rain Clan, right?
Yep. That was kind of a surprise. We had our old Alarad is also military, and they were having to move. So she stepped down, and let's see. I'm trying to think of her name on the forums. I know her real name. Her real name is Mariah, and she got voted in, and I got a message the day before it was announced asking me if I'd be Ruzalor. And I thought that was something I'd always wanted to do, was be able to be part of the, you know, the clan leadership, to be able to help promote, you know, the growth and aid members. And right now we're working on, Veyrang actually has its own website, and nice. Yep, and they're doing Mariah's husband is putting that all together, and we're going to put a blog section for, like, Ask the Ruzalor. And every week, I'm going to take one part of the CRL and go in depth about it and answer questions. And then,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll link it to you guys as well. Basically, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into, like, Flight Suits first, explain all the different variations, what's okay. And then if anybody has any questions or anything, they can ask me. If it's something I can't answer, it's something I can take to the other Ruzalors and get it cleared up. So
awesome. That is an awesome idea.
So, yeah, I know it's always been something where, you know, people always are unclear about certain things. And
if you need clarification, anytime.
Awesome. I'll keep that in mind. I'll definitely hit you up.
Not a problem. Now, it's one of those the CRLs are something that are always under discussion. They're always evolving. They're always changing. So,
yep. Well, and it's always nice.
You were wondering what the forum name was. It's My Riot.
Yeah, Myriot.
See, I can't pronounce stuff either.
It does look like My Riot, though.
It's spelled
My
Riot. It's spelled that way.
Yes. And she's awesome. She's very, she definitely keeps us going. We have lots of events going on. It's not something that I can always attend because we have kids. Mm-hmm. But the clan's very active, so that's always good to see. It's unfortunate that, you know, we do have some members up north, but most of our members are concentrated in Las Cruces and El Paso, which is, if you don't know that, it's the far southern side of New Mexico that borders on Texas, so everything kind of happens down there. But that group is really active, so it's always good to see that. That was something we didn't have in Vegas at the time.
Sounds like a great group.
They are, and it's growing. We actually had, I want to say, we had something like 8 new members or 6 to 8 new members at the Armor Party, and a lot of them. We actually had a 501st guy drop in on us too, which we weren't expecting. He came from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Nice.
So, do you have a lot of conventions in the area, or you just do, like, local events mostly, or?
Well, there's Phoenix, which is the closest and the largest for us, which is about 6 hours away. But Wizard World is coming out with Albuquerque Comic-Con next year.
Oh, okay.
And that'll be 3 hours. And then we also have El Paso Comic-Con was bought out by Las Cruces Comic-Con. So Las Cruces Comic-Con will be coming up in September. So, and then that'll be the one we're going to try to focus on making a little, you know, so more for the Mercs.
Plenty of opportunities then. Nice.
Oh, yes. And we're always working with the community. We've done stuff at Home Depot. We'll be going to a baseball game probably this coming week. And the 501st in Rebel, well, specifically the 501st in our area, involves us a lot. So that helps out.
Oh, that's good.
Mm. And cooperation, so. that's something we always love to hear.
Yeah.
Everyone's heard so many horror stories, but in reality, a lot of it's all the ones that you never hear about that are just 100% fine.
Oh, yeah.
You only hear about the bad examples, not the 100 every month that just go fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, well, actually, it's really funny. We're having a Star Wars group meetup in Carlsbad, New Mexico, at the end of this month, or end of August, I should say. And there it's all of the groups, and they're doing kind of like a social outing. We're going camping together.
Neat.
So,
nice.
Yeah. Doing something outside of trooping or an official event just so we can all get to know each other.
Very good. Yeah, something without the armor just to hang out and get to know some people.
Exactly. Without dying of heat stroke or...
Yeah.
Well, that's usually one of the most fun parts of any troop is like just going to like McDonald's afterward.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's just want something to eat and I just want some water. And just, like, shooting the breeze.
Yeah, the shared experience of overheating. Dehydration, all those fun things.
It's a bonding moment, that's for
sure.
It is.
It's like, you don't know. You just don't know.
When you share the pain, it's a deeper level of understanding.
We were there. We did this.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Anytime you can look at a member of another costuming organization and use Macho Man Randy Savage's voice to say, "This man's my brother," you know that you've got something special going on.
And that's kind of how it was here. The local 501st chapter, we did a commercial for the local convention here, and you know, we're in Florida, and they got us all out in this field. And they weren't ready to shoot yet, so we're all just standing out in the Florida sun. Stormtroopers, Boba Fett, I'm in my kit, and we're all just dying. And we're not even moving. We're just standing there in the sun, you know.
Were the backs of your knees sweating? That's bad. Oh.
Everything was. Yeah, we're all wrapped in this stuff, and it really seals in the flavor. Mm. We had people passing out, and I get that's actually the closest I ever got to passing out. And we all just went inside, and paramedics checking us out. It's like, no, just need water and air conditioning.
Yeah.
We've done this before.
Yeah, it was just... But yeah, everybody from every group, it was just, this is the shared suffering.
Hey, they're just watching out for you because you know that he's Josh and can sneak up on you pretty quick though.
Oh yeah,
you do want to be careful. So
definitely,
I've heard some
pretty nasty tales about some of those events. Especially, yeah. I've heard Dresden Acacian nearly went to the hospital for a heat stroke.
Yep.
Yeah, he was wearing a ton of armor.
Yep, he almost did, but.
Ladies and gentlemen, hydration is important at conventions. If you're planning on doing a parade of any variety, please don't drink the night before. Or if you do drink the night before, please don't do the parade. General standing rule.
That's a bad recipe.
You know what?
Yeah.
I don't know if we've actually had anyone have any trouble during the Mercs parade. During the Mercs segment of the Dragon Con parade, though. I know we had one of the other groups did, but...
Yeah.
Well, we've had some problems where we've had people who come out of it at the end, and they're ghost white.
Yep.
And
they're barely
made
it, which is not.
Yeah, they're just pushing it across the finish line, and I mean, it's basically a matter of time when you've got people who are doing that. So,
Yeah, there was
ladies and gentlemen, please hydrate. Please, please, please don't drink before you go in the Dragon Con parade. Or don't do the parade. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah. I've done that, and I can speak from experience. You don't want to do it. It's really, really, really bad.
Now, do you guys go into con mode? Because I drink just enough so that I don't have to de-kit for eight hours.
Not the day before. The day before.
No. Day of.
Chugging water.
You're talking about the still suit syndrome.
Yes.
Where you drink. Yes. You drink
just enough to sweat it out. Yeah. Yes.
Correct.
You drink an equivalent amount. To hydrate, yes.
I have done that on accident.
Yeah, I inadvertently do that most of the time.
I don't think I've ever actually done that on purpose. but I think I usually have a water supply on me. I've got like a gas mask bag that has like a Camelback bladder in it. Because it's not on my back or anything like that, I usually forget it's there. So it's like, oh, I'm thirsty. Oh, dude, I have water. All right.
back when I was priding myself on the number of hours I spent in kit, not unlike somebody else we know who just got Ori Ramakad, I would do that intentionally. However, nowadays, nah.
You guys have the advantage, we'll just say, in that realm of things, because as a female wearing a one suit, I have to completely de-kit to use the restroom.
It's true.
That's why you got
to...
It's
still a royal pain. But no,
there's
it's like they're
logistics involved. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it's definitely a pain for both genders, especially if the pizza that you ate is taken in effect. That's gonna mess with someone regardless of your anatomical makeup.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why you need to be able to kit design here. Yep. You need to be able to remove at least the bottom half of your kit in under 30 seconds.
You're waiting that long. There's something wrong.
I can't do 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
No, 30 seconds. You got to be able to do it in 30 seconds or less, because if you've been drinking at a convention and suddenly you hear the bells toll because they toll for thee, you know that you're in trouble.
we'll talk more about the specifics of dealing with the heat later, but a couple other things we want to talk about. I guess we'll call it Mercs news, because they have to do with the Mercs. First thing that I want to talk about is a bunch of you have already seen it, a bunch of you have already sent me money for it, but KTR has its own very own fancy-dancy collector's patch now. It's right in the trading station. In fact, the only person who hasn't sent me money for it that has expressed interest is Thaxos here. Everybody else is just like, bing, here, take my money, shut up and take my money.
Well, you know what, the exchange rate right now is pretty bad. I was hoping the dollar would get a little better before I had to throw double the money at you.
Nah, it's the summer, all of your people came down here.
I didn't know it existed till just now. So how much money do I need to send you?
Brian, you want to just grab me one while you're at it?
It's a pretty.
Sean, I will buy you a patch. Yes,
aww.
I will get you a patch. I will totally do that.
It's standard patch rates that everybody else really uses: $5 shipped domestic, $7 if you're international. Any overspill is just going to go right to the
Sean,
right to Little Warrior.
You are worth $7 to me. I will spend $7 to give you a patch.
That's $7 US, right? Which is like 10 Canadian, so.
It's $7 US, yeah.
Yes. Who knows what will happen by the time this comes out.
So you value me more, I'm worth more, your value of me increases when it goes through the exchange rate, so that's awesome.
It's not that bad. Let's see. What's I'm on the Google. It is okay. It's $9, Sean. Right now,
only $9.
It's $9.
Really, Brian? Only $9.
Okay, I'll you're still worth $9, man.
But
that is not a problem.
But yeah, go and check out the trading station. It's right in there with all the other patches and collector's coins and shirt runs that you can chuck your money at and make your patch jacket look all sweet. Not sure how long I'm going to leave that up afterward. It's been going for a little while, so I'm going to probably try and close that down within a week or two. So get your get your requests in quick.
Will do.
And if you don't, tough.
Yep, if you don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the next time I'm going to make it. So
you'll be SOL.
Yep. Might not even be the same patch next time. Just saying.
Dun, dun, dun.
The second item of news, something that Brian and the rest of the app team wanted us to bring up, was we'd like to have another discussion about EVA foam.
Yes, it is. EVA foam is not an approved material for your plates, or for your gauntlets, or for your helmet, unless you want to cover it with fiberglass and make it into a nice fiberglass job. Then go ahead, but EVA foam, as it stands, not going to cut it for armor. It's just too soft, it bends too easily, and it doesn't look like Boba Fett. Boba Fett has hard plates, not soft, spongy plates that look like yoga mats or kids' play mats. Sorry, just doesn't work.
Now, a lot of the confusion comes from, we do have members that have used EVA foam on parts of their armor. They've used them as accent pieces, like a lot of people who make the Sand Trooper style or Arc Trooper style pauldrons. Those EVA can be a component for that.
Yeah, but that's not the plates. That's, no. You know, that's along the lines of soft parts, or, you know, in that particular case, it's an accessory. The pauldrons are an accessory.
Yep.
But as for actual helmets and plates and gaunts and knees and shins, it just doesn't work. Not unless you want to cover it in fiberglass. And then it's fiberglass and it doesn't matter anymore.
Yep.
But that's a really time-consuming and expensive way to do it.
So you might as well just go straight for the Sintra or metal.
Yep.
You know, it's...
And if you can't find Sintra in your local area, try www.foamboardsource.com. If you live in the U.S. or Canada and you can hear this podcast, odds are you can buy stuff from there.
And if you live in the U.K., tough.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, but I'm sure that all the people over there have that covered. There's going to be something you can use.
And
if you can actually find a sign shop in your area that print signs, sometimes they will actually give you their scraps for free.
Yep.
So call around, do some legwork.
Yep.
Yeah, there's so many materials out there, and it comes up from time to time, and the discussion comes back, and it is a great material for certain costumes and certain, you know, cosplay activities, but for us it just doesn't work. If you're going to build Mass Effect armor, have at it. That's the go to it.
Yep.
That's your material of choice. Just for us, for plates, it doesn't work.
Yep.
Sorry, we've talked about it from time to time. It comes back up, and usually there's someone who, hey, I want to build it with this material, and every now and then it gets discussed, and what's happened so far is, you know, the pros just are completely outweighed by the cons.
Mm.
So, you know, who knows? 5 years from now, maybe the technology changes and they have a different form of it that works. I don't know what's going to happen, but for the moment, it just doesn't work.
It does not look the way we would like it to look.
Nope.
That is correct.
And yes, we know that there are some people who will be able to paint it up and make it look real nice out there in the world.
That's true.
But unfortunately, those people are in a dramatic minority, and we have to rule for the majority. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
Oh, no, no worries. Every now and then we will get an application through with, you know, foam pieces on it, and, you know, just has to be kicked back. That happens from time to time. Someone will try to slip it through, and it's just, no. And even if you did manage to pass it through, well, then you're going to go troop somewhere. Now you have to deal with your Rusalor saying, what's that?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's just not worth it.
All right.
That's my two cents.
All right. Moving on into Star Wars news. The first item that we have, it's not any kind of confirmed yet. It's, you know, heavy rumor sort of thing. But because Disney has had a fair amount of success with its Netflix-based Marvel programs, i.e. Daredevil, they are looking towards maybe steering Star Wars in that direction as well. So there's talks of resurrecting the long since development hell ridden live action TV show that was originally going to be airing on like NBC and then Fox.
Wasn't it FX?
And then FX and then, you know, so on and so forth. There's talks somewhere, somebody.
Wasn't it on Tribune Broadcasting Network for a while?
Yes, actually it was. It was supposed to be for a very brief period of time.
I wonder why they never considered HBO.
Right after Touched by an Angel.
And we never.
Wow.
But moral of the story is that Disney is apparently thinking about moving live-action stuff to Netflix, because they've seen how well Clone Wars has done after that move to Netflix. They've seen their numbers from Daredevil. They've seen how well Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has done once that hit Netflix. So I mean,
yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did better on Netflix than it did on TV. So,
so they've got
the
numbers.
That.
Wait, it switched. I just watched it online, so I didn't realize that it switched to Netflix from live TV.
It did. Well, I think it still airs on ABC.
No, yeah, but it still airs. But the old seasons are playing on Netflix.
Yep.
It's also, they also actually, I think, are releasing seasons, like, they're still playing them on ABC first, but I believe they're actually releasing them episodically on Netflix, which is kind of a first for Netflix.
Gotcha.
That's good, because I couldn't get past three episodes of that show when it was on TV. Or when I saw it on TV.
It does get better. The second season.
It would have to.
Yeah.
It would really have to.
There's nowhere else to go.
But, yeah.
And that's, honestly, that's great news for people like me. Like a very large number of nerds out there. I don't have cable.
I don't either.
Why would you? You have streaming media on the internet.
There we go.
But, so I don't have cable. I mean, I can watch it. I have, you know, they down at least where I live, I can get the digital broadcast of, you know, the big three, ABC, NBC, Fox, and that fourth one, the CW. I can get those on air, like off the airwaves with a homemade antenna, but that's just still a giant, as much of a pain in the ass as it was back in the 60s.
Do the dance!
I honestly reserve that basically for the Super Bowl and the Olympics.
And that still seems like too much.
It almost is. But, so that means that I, as someone who doesn't want to pay a cable company and doesn't want to steal it off the internet, if it's on Netflix, I'm already paying $8. So there it is.
There you go, yeah.
Commerce.
Yep. So I'd actually be able to watch Star Wars, guys.
Yay!
And honestly, like, and maybe if they do that, maybe they'll move Rebels on there as well, because currently that's still only on Disney XD, and they haven't released DVDs of the first season yet.
And it's really hurting their viewership, actually.
It really is. Like, it's, like, they, I want them so hard to see where the money is so that I can throw it at them and just buy my DVDs or throw my money at Netflix because it's on there. I want to watch Rebels more.
They they haven't put the first season out on DVD?
They have not.
Not of Rebels, no.
Because they've made bad mistakes with their decision-making.
Well, what they did was they released Spark of Rebellion. They released the first season, the first episode, season one, episode one. They released that on DVD not long after it came out as sort of a generate the interest. And because that's what you used to do for children's programming was you release, like, two or three episodes at a time on a DVD, You released it out there for $9. People would buy each one, and that's how it worked.
In the 80s, yeah.
The consumer model has changed. Like, I work in a store that sells DVDs. People don't care. They want to buy a whole season. Especially because that Netflix. Average person is now 25 years old and has their own money to spend.
Yep.
So.
And also, like, they could alternatively be watching Star Trek the original series.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
So, if Disney does go towards Netflix, who freaking Ray? That would make my day.
I honest to God hope they kill their XD service, because, like, not necessarily the channel, whatever, but I really, really hope that they can their digital distribution model for that, because that's terrible.
Mm. I've not even tried to use it.
Well, part of it
is you anybody tries to use it, and I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, it's a pain.
I have it on my Roku. I've never used it once. Like, it's a channel on there that I've never actually punched in. Who is your, you know, provider so you can use this? Like, I don't care that much.
Well, and still, like, people like me who don't have a provider to start with, we're still left out in the rain. Exactly. So. But speaking of Disney and their live-action shindigs, they released the directors for the Han Solo standalone picture.
Oh yeah,
and
is it a moving picture?
It is a moving picture.
Ah,
They have announced that Christopher Miller and Phil Lord are going to be the two guys behind it. You might not know their names; their names themselves really aren't that huge, but they were the guys behind both 21 and 22 Jump Street. The new remakes with Channing Tatum and the other dude, Jonah Hill.
Wait. Are we going to get Ice Cube?
Maybe.
As Lando?
Maybe. But they their other two big movies were Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the first one, not the second one, and the Lego movie.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
The Lego movie.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, in all likelihood, this will probably be... This stands a very strong chance of being the funniest Star Wars movie ever to come out.
Or
terrible, yes.
Or the Lego Star Wars movie to come out.
Oh, God.
We have Lego Star Wars video games. I mean,
awesome.
Han and Chewie singing "Everything Is Awesome."
Han and Chewie do have a spaceship.
That's the thing that really makes me actually kind of excited, is because one of the best parts of the Lego movie was that, like, 2-minute Star Wars scene where they had Billy Dee Williams.
Yep.
They had Billy Dee Williams, they had Anthony Daniels, so they went that far to get those two guys to each read 2 lines of dialogue for this movie.
You might as well go all the way.
Yeah, and I mean, it was such a great scene. Because, like, I mean, Lando had that line, it's like, oh, we must be in the right galaxy, because that is a heavenly body.
Like,
yes! And, I mean, like, I'm honestly kind of excited about this. I'm more excited about this than any of the other directors that have kind of come and gone. Like, one of the other directors for one of the Anthologies movies was the guy who did Chronicle. And he's not. It's a terrible movie, is what it is.
Might be why.
And he's not doing it anymore. So, hooray! Thank you. Disney.
What about the Rogue One thing?
Yeah. No details on that I've heard.
Do we have a date on the Han Solo movie yet?
According to StarWars.com. Slated for a May 25th, 2018 release.
Okay.
So next spring.
What?
Next spring.
Not the next spring.
I'm recording this in the future.
You need an extra next in there.
Yeah, next spring. I keep thinking it's like, oh, it's December. Yeah, it's December. I've already watched The Force Awakens. Like, because I'm an idiot.
Or next spring.
Yeah. So let's see, May 25th, 2018. So far, obviously, they can move that up and down, whatever they want to do.
Or it could go away tomorrow.
Yeah, honestly. There's no announcements on casting or anything like that. They just have the directors, the producers, and the writers.
Now, what about the rumor of the new holiday special?
That rumor is still going strong.
That I'm starting right now.
It's going real strong.
As a non-industry insider.
No. It's one of the three Netflix shows coming up.
Yeah, like DreamWorks has their Christmas and Halloween anthologies. They're adding a Star Wars one. Yeah.
And the rumor that I'm starting that they're remaking Caravan of Courage.
Oh, God.
That I'm starting right now. That rumor that I just made up just now.
I love that movie.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but was that actually the worst of the two Ewoks movies? I don't remember.
I was a small child at the time, so I couldn't tell you.
I think the second movie was the better one.
All I know that even as a small child, they thoroughly depressed me.
Yeah, when I first saw those, I was at my grandmother's house, and they were the only Star Wars things, the only, like, kids-oriented DVD, not DVDs, VHS, that they had at the time. So, I mean, whatever, I watched them, like, I like Star Wars, and I was, like, I don't know, 5 at the time, so I still thought Ewoks were cool, like, they're still cool. Like let's be honest. They are the most effective guerrilla force in Star Wars.
And as I have argued for many years, they seasoned Han Solo. Yeah.
Very technically speaking, the Rebel Alliance is the most effective guerrilla force.
Who has never lost a battle against the Empire?
At what point did the Rebel Alliance sprinkle garlic on Han Solo as they were cooking him?
You would have to ask Leia.
I know things might have gotten weird on Hoth, but yeah. I'm pretty sure they were the only ones putting roasted red pepper and garlic on him.
Or whatever the Ewok equivalent of roasted red pepper
da-do-da-do-da-do-da.
Is. What was the name of that critter from Endor? God.
The little speedy dude?
Gorax.
The Gorax was the giant
Gorax.
Thing.
Yeah.
The one that ate the Ewoks.
Well, yeah. Everything. It ate everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, its primary diet
was everything.
What was the little thing? The little bugger.
His name is Nien Nub. You need to actually go ahead and give him his proper respect. He may look like a mollusk.
No, that's not who I'm talking about. I was talking about the one of the other characters that they
the little Moppet thing.
Yeah, the little white fuzzy thing.
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
Sorry, I think of Dark Crystal when you say that.
Fizzgig.
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 No, that's Dark Crystal.
That Ewok celebration song stuck in my head now. The
Ocha. He touched Ocha.
Yep.
Oh, no.
I was actually...
Keep it going.
Is
he listening to it right now?
Now Brian's a hardcore Ewok enthusiast. Little known fact.
So I'm gonna drop out of the recording.
Oh, what the hell? Oh, that's. See that was one of the true travesties of the special edition was removing the original Ewok celebration song.
Yeah, not only that, removing all of the songs, like...
Yeah, the original...
Lava New is great.
Yeah. That's
there,
it's arguably...
I went to look for the lyrics because Brian apparently knows them way too well.
No, I was just making random noises that kind of sounded like it.
I'm pretty sure the lyrics are yub yub.
Yub nub.
Yeah. Eat chop and yub nub. And then, of course, apparently there's actually a basic English translation.
Yep. Look, you can look it up on Wikipedia. You search Ewok Celebration or Yub Nub.
I'm doing and, this right
and
now.
And it's right in there.
Freedom. We can be free. Come on and celebrate.
Yeah, it's okay. Really, it's just like it's the Ewok version of Celebration.
Celebrate.
I mean, it is.
Come on.
I suppose that's why it's called the Ewok Celebration.
But
$5 says someone has it tattooed on their back.
I forget. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was written by. Its primary saving grace was it was written by John Williams.
Yeah.
And sung by Bono.
Wasn't
and the Edge.
His son actually wrote the English lyrics to it.
Oh, that is right. Yeah.
Yep.
But then in the special edition, they replaced it with what? Victory Celebration music.
Yep. Yeah, it's called Victory Celebration, which is also John Williams. So they, they went back to the man to replace his own music, but
they did they also YouTube? Then zoomed around and were like, "Let's go visit Naboo because we care about Naboo in the original trilogy."
Yep.
Hey, that was, yeah. however, that was the first time Coruscant had ever been shown.
Yes, it really was, and yeah, they toppled the statue, and then they cut away right before the riot police show up and disperse the crowd.
Well, and Coruscant
in broken sentences.
Coruscant was non-canonical at that point. That's the only reason we have Coruscant.
Yeah, they never actually even mention it.
Now we have it because Clone Wars is back.
They do not mention it or Imperial Center or whatever name it happened to be going by in the original trilogy.
Yep.
Crazy stuff.
Well, they never actually named the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi either.
No, but I mean there are little things that are canon that came from like the novelizations and the script, because everything that's in the script is canon.
Yeah. Well, I think the first time they actually found out about the name Ewok was from the toys that they made.
Yeah. That's where we got Wilroe Hood.
And yeah, I was about to say that's where we get that's why we have half of the names of the characters, like Sice Noodles.
Yep.
All that stuff is from the action figures.
And the Wolfman.
Yeah.
By the way, these lyrics are terrible.
And they had to come up with a name for him too.
They're great, aren't they, Brian?
Didn't they call him like a Shistovan or something?
Yeah, he's called Shistovan and Wolfman. But Wolfman is still on the box.
I'm pretty sure Borat wrote this.
The lyrics, they're fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like, please.
They're all about glorious nation Kazakhstan.
I'll post the link to the Wikipedia article in the in the thread. For everybody to see, because you gotta look at these yourself.
Yeah, this is god awful. It's hilarious. I love it.
But there is an accompanying sheet music if you want to drum along.
Break out your synthesizer
or your stormtrooper helmet xylophones.
That's right.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how
they
managed
the heads out of them.
couldn't have. Some of them still have to like have part at least of the heads in so that they can get the different tonal resonance, because otherwise it would all just sound the same.
But they make wonderful soup bowls.
I thought all the soup would strain out at the frown that's got the venting on it.
That's why it's upside down.
But you can only fill it like halfway then.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine. That's a lot of cereal.
They're supposed to be able to seal them against like space, though. So,
were you though? I thought they had different stormtroopers that you see for all of that one scene that people are still trying to figure out what they were on the exterior of the Death Star.
They do have those guys as well. They are a separate
space trooper.
Those were
construction workers.
However, those are space troopers. However, the normal stormtrooper helmet also allows you to breathe in a vacuum for a short period of time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't think they could, but
yeah, it's only like 5-10 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, but well, it's enough to get the hell back in the ship.
Yeah. The final bit of Star Wars related news was the SDCC. I don't know what you want to call it. It's not a trailer. It's like, I don't know, a featurette, teaser. Either way, they put out a sweet video. It's on YouTube now. You've probably actually already watched it. My friends and I all gathered around a TV and streamed it so we could all fanboy together once the SDCC folks released it to the public after the private screenings for the 3,000 people that were in the theater. Basically, it was just a semi-tour of the sets, and they did little interview blurbs with some of the prop makers and the ship builders and the actual costume character actors, the people who are wearing rubber masks and stormtrooper armor. On top of that, just Simon Pegg bouncing around, just going, "I am so happy right now." And, I mean, I can't blame him. Like, they are honestly, seriously committed to limiting CG where practical, and throwing in a practical effect where it would do the most good. Like, from the looks of it, I mean, I'm sure we're going to have some CG stormtroopers if we have to see 100 of them charging somewhere. But that being said, everybody who's standing next to a guy, every stormtrooper that's standing behind Captain Phasma, is going to be a real stormtrooper.
Well, it's gonna not only that,
they could go back to the original trilogy where they have cardboard cutouts for the next, 45, 50 stormtroopers after you see the first three in up close in person.
Also fun. Well, yeah,
they've also got the
matte paintings.
They've got who was it? They did an actual so everybody's seen that one shot where they've got Kylo Ren, or what everybody thinks is Kylo Ren, standing up on that platform giving the Nazi propaganda rally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen
they actually
shot.
Built all that. Those are all people and extras that they gathered for that. That's a thing. They didn't CGI that. Now, it might be CGI when the final film comes, but the shot that they showed us in the trailer was not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that they did in that film that they could have done with CGI, like BB-8 and all that jazz.
Yeah,
but they actually said, we could do this as CGI, but R2-D2 isn't CGI, and R2-D2 is a badass. So let's try and make a new 2-D2.
Well, and that was one
and
of
make
the,
it a soccer ball.
That was one of the biggest failings of episodes 2 and 3, was mm-hmm. every single clone trooper that you see is not there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Every single one. They could have had they didn't even bother to make six clone troopers and just copy them and just paste them everywhere. No, they just completely.
Well, technically, they only made one clone trooper. But,
well, yeah,
you know.
But still, they didn't even do that.
They had no costumes, and as we all know, you can build them and wear them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they didn't have costumes. My understanding was that LFL never actually built a real human clone
trooper.
Yeah,
there wasn't a single one.
They had to, in order to make the official one that the 501st uses, they actually had to modify the design because there were parts of it that just straight up don't work because humans can't clip through themselves.
Yep. And that's why there are very few Phase 1 clone trooper costumes.
Yeah.
Because they're as uncomfortable as they look.
Yeah, and not only that, they also don't fit normal humans, really. They fit very tall.
They fit Temuera Morrison.
Yes, they fit Temuera Morrison. But
actually,
they
don't even fit him because he's a regular-sized dude.
Yeah, these are for, people... Well, I think Django is actually taller than Temuera is. I've stood next to Temuera, and I think he's 5'10". And I'm pretty sure Django
is 6 foot.
He's a regular-sized
guy.
And Django is 6 foot, and then the clones are 6'2".
Yeah.
So they're much taller, and they're very, very skinny and fit.
Yep.
So there's a very small number of Star Wars nerds who can fit into that costume. So
still
they're
a larger
avoiding
number
that.
Than the people that can fit into the 3PO costume. Mm.
That's also true. Anthony Daniels and five other guys. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thankfully they're avoiding that. Actually, you got to see in the behind the scenes thing, you got to see Simon Pegg wearing some kind of fat suit. And a cool suit underneath the fat suit because they were in Namibia shooting this. So, and he actually had the blackout eyes like
Mayhew does.
Mayhew.
Yeah, yep. Like Peter Mayhew has to when he's in the costume.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm kind of the devil's advocate on this one because the their whole marketing campaign has been differentiating the fact that there's less CGI, and CGI was a problem with some of the prequels, but lack of story hurt those things more than anything.
Yes, lack of story and
bad acting.
Directing.
Bad acting.
Yeah.
And, there were like three good actors in the whole series, and they tried so desperately to rescue it.
Yep, they carried like, those movies.
Well, friggin' Liam Neeson. Yeah. Liam Neeson was easily the best part of Episode 1, even better than Ewan McGregor, because Ewan McGregor was like 20.
Yeah.
And he had been in like
he
two
hadn't grown into it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
he was still high from Trainspotting.
Yeah. And then in the second film and the third film, Ewan McGregor stepped up to the plate and started doing work.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he stepped up in a big way.
Yeah.
And honestly, Christopher Lee was probably the best performance in Episode 2.
No, like that goes without saying.
Which is not hard, really. Well, the thing is, he only has like 8 lines.
Yeah, but those 8 lines, you do not
He's
ignore.
Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
He could have read his laundry list and been fine.
Well, the funny thing is, I thought of Count Dooku as actually threatening. Like, Darth Maul, for me, when I was a child, I was actually very surprised that Qui-Gon got killed. Because to me, I was like, oh, look, we got a badass over here, or whatever the 10-year-old equivalent of that was, where I have already become jaded from watching too much Gargoyles. And Batman the Animated Series, where, you know, there's a whole... Well, actually, not so much in Batman, but in Gargoyles, it's pretty bad. Mm. Where you have some sick villain decay and Beast Wars, you know, where Megatron is useless.
Yeah.
And so you see this guy and he's like, oh, look, this is the new bad guy that they came up with to try and scare people. Look at how red and black he is. Look, he's wearing a black version of the Jedi outfit. Look, he's on... Well, he's only on the screen to attack people and to say cryptic things.
Yeah.
Like, that's all he does. He says 2 cryptic things, and then he tries to hit people with his lights.
Again, that goes back to lack of story and lack of character development.
They could have
CGI
done so
wasn't,
much with him.
Yeah, the CGI wasn't that
much
of
it's
a problem.
Clone Wars, I believe.
Well, that was the thing. Easily the best, to me, the best lightsaber fight in the entire prequel trilogy is the first half of Dooku's fight in Episode 2. Before Yoda shows up.
The part
where he just takes Obi-Wan and Anakin apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something that they actually kept in Clone Wars that I thought was great, was the fact that Count Dooku does not lose a lightsaber fight in the Clone Wars.
No.
Like, the only time he ever, like, quote, loses a fight is the time when he's getting attacked by, like, 6 Night Sisters, or it's 3 Night Sisters, and some voodoo stuff, and he's poisoned.
Yeah.
Like, every other time you go up against Count Dooku, and he's like, what? No, no. Like, you see, I taught this. I taught the guy who taught you, and I taught his dad, too.
Yeah.
Like,
like Jedi Master turned Sith Lord.
Well, and he like, was not. Not only was he the Jedi Master, he's the Jedi Master who redefined the lightsaber style designed to fight other lightsaber users.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well,
he was so good, he invented a new lightsaber for it.
The best example that I can give is that if you go back to Episode 2, it's going along pretty good, and then the director says, "You know what? Let's add another action scene in here. Let's do an entire thing with this droid factory that we have no sets for. We're going to do the whole thing on a green screen and just shove it in there, and now R2-D2 can fly."
Yeah.
That's every bit of that sequence is just terrible, terrible writing.
Yeah.
The CGI wasn't very great, but it's just a bad scene.
Well, this is what happens when you have a proven franchise, and they're like, oh, it's just going to carry itself.
Yep.
You know? Uh-huh.
No one knew when to say no.
Yeah. Yep.
Cause, and, I mean, if you think about it, like, the quality of the CG, because it's, at this point, at the scale they were using it at, it was a budget thing. Like, they were throwing so much money, but they still were going to run out eventually, so they sort of had to pick and choose. So just imagine if they had cut out half the CG, how much better the half that they would have kept would have looked.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I think Lord of the Rings is probably the best example of how to marry the different technologies.
I was thinking that.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings actually did a bunch of digital matte paintings, too. Where it was a matte painting that had 3D elements imposed on top of it, And good stuff like that. I'm also going to say here that I think that the Star Trek movies came to rely too heavily, the new ones, too heavily on CGI to perform relatively mundane tasks.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the hallways on the Killer Prize, where it's like, look at this really long hallway we have to run down, this one section that we have actually built, and the rest of this is just a CGI loop.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a bulkhead run in the way so we can cut the shot and start it back over for the 6 feet of this hallway we built.
If you go back to the original, to New Hope, you know, episode 4, but what I grew up
Star
on as the original Star Wars, you know, you have the last big metal scene and all that, and, you know, they're all watching them, everybody except Chewbacca get medals, but most of the people that are in that scene, they're paintings. That's all one big matte painting. In fact, I think half of them or more, they don't even have faces.
Yeah.
It's just a flesh-colored blob.
Yeah.
And nobody cared and nobody complained about, oh, well, that, you know, this fakery and this trickery and like, no, it worked. It was a tool that they used and the writing was good. So as long as they have good writing, I'll be there. If the story sucks, no amount of practical or CGI effects is going to save it.
Now, on the flip side, it's still Star Wars. It's not all horrible.
No, it's not horrible. I still enjoy the prequel trilogies for what they are, but...
Yeah. Fun movies, not...
They are.
...the end-all, be-all of Star Wars.
Yeah.
No, and it was actually... I recently watched... Episode 2 was someone who'd actually never seen it before, and watching that was someone who'd never seen it, and they're just seeing this thing for the first time as an adult going, wow, this is just a bad movie. And it's like, well, yes. I can't really dispute that.
yes.
Wow, yeah, it's kind of bad, but we still love it.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, it did give us the prequels, they gave us more Star Wars.
It gave us a bigger sandbox to play in.
Yeah, it gave me, as a kid who grew up, you know, I was born in the 80s, so I didn't get a chance to see any of the original movies in theaters. It gave me a chance to do that. It gave me a chance to go see the new Star Wars in theaters, which is something that I honestly didn't think I'd ever be able to do again. So,
yeah, the only one I saw was Jedi. I was a little kid when that one came out.
Like... So, I mean, they gave us that, and I...
Oh, yeah.
And I, when I was 12, I went and saw episode 1 5-6 times in theaters. It was, like, the first movie that my parents just, like, let me go to on my own. Because, I mean, at that point, like, the theaters were empty, and I was the only one watching, so they knew I wouldn't get in trouble. like, Mom, can I go see Star Wars again? Yeah, all right, here's $8, go, have fun. I'll pick you up in 2 hours.
The whole marketing campaign has just been based around, hey, it's not the prequels.
Yeah.
We're not doing it like the prequels, and I hope that includes the script. And I have a lot of hope on that because it is Lawrence Kasdan.
Yep.
And JJ gets up and periodically goes, guys, I only have one chin.
So I respect what they're trying to do. I hope they pull it off. I mean, fingers crossed.
Yep.
I mean, the actors seem really into it as well. San Diego Comic-Con.
Harrison Ford. I heard
there was,
he kinda...
there was some other stuff with the original actors, but add the actual Star Wars booth, if you can call it that, the Star Wars Megaplex, the giant section of floor space that Star Wars had. The Belgians had their the character's name is Rey, the female. Her speeder was at the Star Wars mega booth.
The fudgesicle, I believe.
Yep.
Yes, the fudgesicle.
The fudge cycle. And,
the fudge cycle.
The fudge cycle.
And we actually saw, and I'm totally drawing a blank on the names, but three of the main actors of the new ones. So it's whoever plays Rey, John Boyega, the stormtrooper that we see with his helmet off in the original trailer, or teaser rather, and then. I'm totally drawing a blank on the third
Oscar
person.
Oscar Isaacs.
Yeah, I think it was that guy. But they actually were at that booth for a little bit, and they interacted with the crowd. And one of our mercs, not being an armor, unfortunately, but still, one of our mercs yelled out, "We're doing great!" And he was the only one that really responded, so they actually called him over, and he got to interact with them a little bit and got a selfie with them at the end, which is pretty cool. So they seem to be really excited for this movie to be coming out. So that always bodes well when the new actors are really on board with things.
Well, and the other thing is that it seems like the old actors are pretty on board with everything as well. The fact that Harrison Ford is out doing convention appearances and interviews and is promoting Star Wars is an impossibility. I'm not sure if you guys truly understand how far over the curve this has had to go.
Yeah, he's like spent decades distancing himself.
Yeah, he has intentionally avoided the convention scene for years and years and years and years. I don't think he ever went to one, like, in any serious fashion before he started going for this film. And that either means they are paying him a huge amount of money because the man is already fantastically wealthy because he gets 1% of Star Wars, which, by the way, made more money than the Super Bowl last year. Or, sorry, not the Super Bowl, than the NFL last year. Made substantially more money than the Super Bowl. Or he's genuinely excited. I think that's a little bit more likely.
Yeah.
I hope that's the case. I really do.
It was just the two actors. It was John Boyega and Daisy Ridley. But still, that was pretty cool that they were excited for it.
I'm holding out hope. Yeah. I have my new hope.
You have your new hope, yes.
I have my new hope. I hope it's not terrible. Please don't suck. Please don't suck.
I don't
Please
know, man. They've
suck.
Got they've got Mark back in, and Mark is a substantially better actor than he used to be. Like, have you guys seen the episode of The Flash where... I don't even watch that show, and I tuned in to watch that.
Wait, are we talking about the one from 1990 or the one from now?
Technically, yes, both of them, because he plays the same character, and he actually plays the same trickster from the
really?
1990s one. Yeah,
yeah, it's a pretty
the basic plot element
now.
Is that he's the original trickster, and that there's another one who is now, like...
I want to go to there.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's absolutely amazing. And he does a phenomenal job. It's almost like he was the Joker for 30 years.
It's almost as if.
It's almost like. hey, by the way, still is.
He has been cast in The Killing Joke.
Yeah, well, I think that him and Kevin Conroy are now trolling because there was a thing where Mark posted a tweet being like... somebody's like, "I really hope that you get cast for playing Joker in The Killing Joke." And then Mark's like, "Yeah, me too." And then they announced like 2 weeks later, "Oh yeah, Mark recorded his dialogue for that like 4 months ago." And then Kevin Conroy posted a tweet being like, "Hey, why didn't I get invited to the party?" And I'm like, troll alert. Like, absolute troll alert.
No, that's a legit question. Why is he not in that? Okay, wait, Star Wars, we're getting distracted. Stay on target.
We were talking Stay about Mark target. Hamill's possibly
That's
best
true.
Role.
Yeah, Mark Hamill. True. Mark Hamill is a substantially better actor.
And that would be Colonel Christopher Blair in Wing Command.
Well, and the current running theory is that he's going to be a little crazy. Coming up in the new film, like the current rumor, which is based off.
I don't want to hear it. La 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 la. You talk about that later.
Okay.
I'm of the bad mindset of Brian.
Anyway,
the less I know, the better. The more excited I'll be when I get to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's bad yeah, enough I can't go on Facebook without someone trying to wreck a movie that they've never seen.
Okay, so they said he's going to be like Obi-Wan.
Well, yeah.
And that he's going to be sort of the old crazy kook guy. And he's going to do that fantastic. He's going to be absolutely amazing at that.
Yeah.
Where I can just see him doing like a combination of Yoda and Obi-Wan.
Seriously, Chewbacca. I'm glad you're home.
Oh God!
If he just goes full on Joker in the middle, that I would pay good money to see that.
I don't know if I could.
If he falls to the dark side, Luke, Joker, Skywalker.
That's
I
a theory
smell
that people
a fan fiction.
I'm sure there's like 17 of those fan fictions.
Oh, yeah, and that's the point when Guyver shows up.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Guyver.
Oh, man. And then Fire Lord Ozai.
Hey, I loved his Ozai.
Ozai was fantastic.
And, oh, God, what's the name of the senator? I should know this. I love this show.
I'm blanking.
Wait, Mark Hamill was...
Google it.
Google, go.
I'm already on it.
He's a senator in Metalocalypse.
Yes. Stampington.
Is it Stampington?
Yeah, Senator Stampington. He's also the
It's like everybody.
He's also the head of the tribunal. Mr. Salakia.
Yes.
Mr. Salakia.
Yep.
We will let them experience romance.
Which is really, if you look at it, it's sort of like a half and half of Ozai and the Joker.
It is kind of.
So it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Dude, it wasn't meant for people. It was meant for fish.
Best line Duncan in the whole
Hills,
show to me.
Duncan Hills, coffee.
Anyway.
Anyways, moving on.
back to stuff. To sum up, practical Star Wars effects are awesome, and we hope that the Episode 7 and all of the constituent following films are going to be rad.
It's entirely likely that, of course, we're going to get bad eggs, kind of like, I don't know.
Indiana Jones?
We don't talk about the fourth one. No.
That never happened.
Yeah, no, I meant...
That was a dream sequence.
No, I meant we're going to get bad eggs like there are bad Marvel films. Everybody seems to disagree on what they are.
Yeah.
But we're going to get bad
Thor
ones.
Thor the Dark World!
Yeah.
I like that one.
I prefer Dark World to the original Thor, but...
I like him.
So, the point is...
It had Christopher Eccleston in it. It was good.
Mm.
Yes. But still, people are going to disagree.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and they're all wrong because I'm right. But
because Albie Talk Radio does not endorse that statement.
It totally does.
Because I mean, there are gonna be people out there. Like, there are people who have said ever since the prequels came out that all three of them were good movies. Like, there are a lot of people who are big George Lucas apologists. I work with one right now, and it's hilarious to just see such deep denial in a living human being, but they're out there.
Well, it depends to what level that you're referring it to, though. Like, if someone's saying that those movies were absolutely horrible, I'm going to be one of those people that disagrees.
Yeah, that's like, they're not that bad, but they're not Academy material.
If you're referring to the people that say that the prequels were just as good or better than the originals,
yeah, they're wrong.
We got a problem.
Yeah. So let's do it very easily. The prequels are like Terminator Salvation, where Terminator Salvation is not a bad film. It's a whole hell of a lot better than Terminator 3.
Mm.
And it's nowhere near as good as 1 and 2.
No.
And that's the same sort of ballpark we're talking about here with the prequels. Now, that being said, I think the prequels are a little bit more Terminator 3 than they are Terminator 4. But, yeah.
I'm not going to agree with that.
I don't know. Jar Jar Binks running around, getting the cheap laughs.
3PO running, fast walking around, getting the cheap laughs.
Yeah, exactly. 3PO fast walking around.
Cheap laughs. Yeah, but 3PO doesn't speak like Jar Jar Binks does.
That's fair, but
he's got a different way of being a nuisance.
Yeah.
But anyways, hopefully it's good.
Everything's subjective.
Everything's subjective. We've gone all over. We've discussed this so many times.
Yeah, but
and yet we still fall back into it.
I know, we still go back to it, but again, let's hope it's good.
I think next time Crow will just edit the podcast if we start going on that line of thought, and he'll just find the first statement that gets us going to that and insert the Akbar, "It's a trap!" And then we'll cut to the part where we're past
back,
all those.
Back to our conversation that never ends.
Now, what are you talking about? Next podcast, I'm just going to cut up like the last three podcasts, and it'll sound like it's new material.
Hey!
Hey, look at that. Freddie Prinze is back on the podcast.
Yeah, he's back.
He's just going to be on the podcast from now on. Right, Freddy?
Yes.
And yes, response from Freddy.
Yeah, I guess we'll move to our Facebook question section, which we've got to...
How do you helmet? How do you helmet?
You put helmet on head. You put helmet on head.
No, wrong.
Screwed it up.
No,
you screwed
no,
it up.
You put it on face?
No. The real question is not how does one helmet, but how is Babby formed? And for those of you who were born after the turn of the millennium, please look that up. Babby, B-A-B-B-Y.
Sorry, I was answering something on Tumblr, because I'm that
what?
Guy.
What? Get out of here. Dye your hair blue and get gauged ears.
Hey, somebody asked the Mercs a question on Tumblr.
It's kind Mercs of my, has a Tumblr.
We do so. Have a Tumblr.
You have a Tumblr?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
Yep.
And in other Mercs news, we have a Tumblr.
MandalorianMercs.tumblr.com. The big question we got from Facebook this month, it's sort of a little late in the season for some people, because summer's kind of going away, but if you're planning on going to the Dragon Con parade, this is definitely the question for you to listen to. Steven asked, any tips for surviving the heat and pain of summer parades? Now, the big thing about that is it's not just, especially a summer parade, it's not only is it hot, but it's hot and you're walking. And you're walking on pavement most of the time. Just blacktop tar road. So it's just a giant heat sink for heat, and you're going to be standing on it for hours. So it's a very special mindset you kind of have to get yourself into. One of the big things, drink lots of water, but don't just drink lots of water that day, because all you're going to do is just pee it out before you even start walking. Drink lots of water the day before.
Ideally, drink lots of water. Yeah, all the time.
All the time. Start your hydration early.
And don't just start it the day before, really. If you're planning on going to the Dragon Con parade or any parade that's out in the heat, so anybody who hasn't done this before, the people who have done it know this and will understand and agree with me. Walking on blacktop in a steel canyon surrounded by mirrors at noon is horrifying. It is a horrifying experience. It's basically one of those little reflective ovens that people used to build in middle school and probably can't anymore because it's a safety hazard. But it's absolutely sweltering. It can get to up to like 110 on the pavement itself, especially in direct sunlight, and you're wearing at least two or three layers of cotton. Just drink lots and lots of water. Don't drink booze the night before. And honestly, drink water before you go to Dragon Con. Like, just make a mental note. I'm going to Dragon Con. I'm going to be in the parade. People do stuff after the parade, and I don't want to be a sponge and all incapable of movement after the parade. So prepare properly. That's what Grandpappy Frost says.
There are little things, like, obviously, you could be like me and ignore this part, but if you are still in the process of building your kit and you know you're going to be doing a lot of parades, like maybe you live out in the desert and you get every single troop is sunny, avoid black as your primary color, especially black for your flight suit. Again, I'm a dingus. My armor is black and silver. My flight suit is dark gray, so I am the worst person to give this advice. I can't stand in the sun anywhere.
I've got a black flight suit and, yeah, mostly black armor with some silver, and, of course, it's metal, so it conducts the heat very well.
Yeah.
But just like Crow here, we live up where there's snow half the year, so half the year we're good, and we stay nice and warm despite it being cold from the sunlight that we absorb.
Yeah.
The other half of the year we're roasting. So
we do a Christmas parade, we're fine. We're adding layers. So we're all good.
Well, and the one thing, too, is if you're building and you have the option, a lot of people buy their flight suits on eBay or something like that. That's really heavy material. if you have the option, get and someone who can sew for you, I would recommend getting something like stretch sateen or wrinkles from Joann's, or even the Rodeo cloth, because it's all cotton and it breathes better. And a lot of times people will buy the Carhartts and stuff like that, and it's really, it's a lot heavier and it's synthetic material.
It's, and still, it won't allow similar weight to the fabric though, right?
It's sturdy, but it actually is a little bit lighter. So
So it breathes better, but it's not like it looks less
Well, the reason they use synthetic for those flight suits is because it tears less easily and it's hydrophobic, whereas cotton is none of those things.
Yeah,
but you don't need to worry about any of those,
because
you're not. This isn't a military operation where you need to be sitting in it for 3 days.
Yeah, and not only that, if it tears, buy a new one. You're only going to wear it for like a grand total of maybe, if you're really diligent and go to a lot of events, you'll wear it for 60 hours in a year. So,
and half of those hours are at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
And so, whereas the people who are buying these sort of industrial grade flight suits are going to be wearing them, three of them, every day of their lives for several years. So you're not going to be putting nearly as many hours on them as these people are. So durability is much less of a concern.
And the fabrics I listed are tougher cottons. They're not like, you know, they're not going to be like your quilting cottons. They're actually performance suit fabrics, so they should hold up rather
not
well.
Not quite denim, but they're still going to hold up pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The same sort of thing goes for your vest, your armor vest. A lot of people, they love to use leather jackets or pleather jackets and that sort of thing because of the look they have. Also, the durability. If you're hanging a bunch of armor, especially metal armor, on it, you're going to want something that's not going to stretch and that's going to stay put and all that sort of stuff. So leather is a great option. But if you
broadcloth.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you're, you know, at all worried about heat, stay away from leather. Go with duck cloth, go with broadcloth, go with twill. Just
leather.
Like there are a lot of a lot of people who use old coats that they've cut up and everything's fine, but RL or Ad up in Wampa, Jarek Dar, the guy is a sweat factory to start with, but part of his problem is that his vest is made out of pleather. Like, when he takes off his vest, you can see the exact outline of where it was, because none of his torso was breathing.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, whereas I have, like, my vest is, it's a quilted, it's multiple layers, but it's multiple layers of cotton and like batting, and it breathes.
Well, and like I wear three technically layers on my suit, where I have a wicking shirt underneath. Well, it's four actually. I have a wicking shirt, like an athletic shirt. On top of that, I wear a suit shirt, but it's a cotton suit shirt. On top of that, I wear a twill vest on which my plates go, and then on top of that, I wear the jacket. So it can get very warm, but because of my choice of fabrics, I actually have panels in the side where it two-tones. It turns out that that's actually a different type of cotton that breathes much better than the twill does, especially because it's not interfaced in the front, or it is not interfaced on the sides like it is in the front.
With regards to the wearing any sort of leather or pleather and whatnot, I just did a parade in my Captain America motorcycle suit, which I'm just going to briefly mention because it's awesome.
On a Japanese bike.
Yeah. Well, it's a Canadian in a Captain America suit on a Japanese bike, so you know.
Yeah.
I'm already breaking a couple rules.
Hello.
But I did that parade and it was I don't know what the conversion to Fahrenheit is, but it was 30 Celsius. And it was
9/5 plus 32.
Sure, do the math. You guys have
it's
calculators.
86 degrees Fahrenheit for those of us in the civilized world.
Right, plus humidity, which made it feel
glorious
worse.
Imperial units.
And then I was sitting on top of a motorcycle that was at 110 Celsius, which was throwing up a lot of heat. Off much like the blacktop, but down in Dragon Con. Will definitely do. So yeah, if you're wearing leather, it doesn't breathe in the slightest, and you will sweat. And right near the end of it, I was starting to feel a little off. So that's another thing with trying to survive those sorts of situations is tell someone if you're not feeling great. So they're ready in case you suddenly are not, you know, finding yourself able to continue forwards in the parade and you can step to the side and someone can, you know, watch out for you. Fortunately, I didn't have a problem and I was on a motorcycle, so I really didn't want to pass out because the whole bike's going to fall over with me, which would not be good.
As a suggestion, I also suggest that when you eat breakfast before you go, first of all, eat breakfast before you go to the parade.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely.
You're going to need that energy.
Yeah, yeah, second of
lots
all,
of
carbs.
Protein.
Carbs. You need a ton of carbs to do the parade because it's essentially a marathon. Yeah, you're not moving very quickly, obviously. But the way your body is going to react to the heat is it's going to start metabolizing very, very quickly. And you're going to need the carbs. Otherwise, you're going to go into ketosis and you'll start to feel freaking awful unless you're one of those people who is a ketone processor to begin with. And you know you are. Yeah, and you might get sick to your stomach and throw up. And I've known people who have complained that they kind of felt it, they kind of threw up in their mouths a little bit and had to push it back down.
Nobody wants to be doing that while in the middle of a parade.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
so don't put yourself in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, just avoid it. Just take real good care of yourself.
And when he says grab breakfast, it doesn't mean scarf something down 20 minutes before you run over to the parade staging area.
Yeah, don't eat a Pop-Tart and shove your helmet on. That doesn't count.
And don't have a really heavy meal right before the event. You need to give yourself some time to digest, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also worth pointing out, especially if you're doing a bigger parade, like 4th of July parades, Labor Day parades, there are always authorities there. There's usually an ambulance floating around that's not actually part of the parade. Those people are there for a reason. You know, if you or someone that's with you is having some serious issues and they are within heat stroke or about to get heat stroke, walk them over there. Just scoot out of the parade. People will make way. Get to some shade.
Yeah,
there's resources there for you.
I'm not sure on the exact numbers, but when it comes to your core temperature, it's a very small increase to go from feeling bad from heat, from potential heat exhaustion, to actually going into heat stroke.
Yeah.
So there's a very short window in which you go from not feeling great to feeling absolutely horrible. So again, you know, communication is key. If you tell someone that you're not feeling great, they can watch out for you. If you do get past that threshold, you know, they can help you out. But if you're not feeling great to begin with, don't try and do it. It's much better to sit it out, and you may miss out on that experience that one time, but there's always another event that you can do that sort of a thing at. It's not
worth Dragon Con's every year.
Putting your health at risk.
Dragon Con's every year, and just if you feel like you can't do it that year, just make sure that you spend a month beforehand and cut some weight and run a little bit, you know. if you have to train for your cosplay events, whatever it takes to make it so you can do what you want to do, it's worth it. It's not silly.
And I think a few of us are doing that right now. We're on the Dragon Con diet.
Yep.
And regular trips to the gym, and it's a thing.
Another tip, which this is usually hard to do for parades just because of the way that they have to stage these things and the way they have to do all the lineups, but avoid whatever sun you can before.
Yeah.
Stay as cool as you can, as long as you can, so that way you know, if you're giving yourself a little bit of breathing room as far as staying out in the sun. Again...
Because once you start, you'll be heating up nonstop. You won't cool down.
No. Again, parades, it's hard, because half the time you're just standing on a side street, which is just as sunny and just as terrible. But if you can, great. Have someone, if you have handlers, have them bring umbrellas. Like those big old golf umbrellas, those work great. If you can do those, that definitely helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that about covers it.
Yep. We did have one other question. This is actually a question from someone in Florida, some chick. But she wanted to ask City here, someone who is well-versed in crafting of soft parts, especially vests, how specifically to make a vest for a girl. And I mean, this is the thing is, like, I can make a vest for me. Like, I can make a very easy vest for me that's just basically a rectangle with another rectangle in the middle cut out for my head, and then elastic on the sides, and it does the job for me. But that won't work necessarily work for a girl. So, how do you go about making a vest that a lady can stick armor on?
Well, there are magical things called darts. it's where you gather the fabric to create a crease to reduce fabric in a certain area, usually further away from the curve, so that it follows the mold of the body. Now, there's different darts, but the one that I use is just a side dart next to the breast. And basically what it does is it creates, it takes the slack in further away from the curve of the chest. And then that way it helps the armor stay in place. It fits the vest a little bit nicer, and it's really simple to do versus trying to do a full fitted front with three pieces that are sewn together. So definitely do a side dart underneath each arm near the sides of the chest, and that'll definitely fit the vest a lot better. And it's easier to do it in person. There is a way to do it by getting measurements from someone. That would take a whole nother podcast to explain, and it'd be like teaching a lesson, but there's a way you can figure it out by taking measurements. And that's the easiest way to do it, is to cut out your front piece and lay it against you, and then gather the fabric, lay the wrong side forward, and then gather the fabric, pin it. And I always test by, you know, holding the one side that I fit first, and then I just do it the same, you know, fold it over and pin where I the seam is, from the top shoulder down to the first seam of the other side dart, and then from the bottom up to the dart again, and then you fold and bring your pins together, and you just sew the other one. It takes me maybe 5 minutes to do it. So it's really simple, really easy. And if you're confused about darts, there's a lot of sites that if you just look up darts, you'll be able to see where other options are for darting your garment. So that's the easiest way to do it.
Well, I think that is all we have for the August 2015 edition of Kel Dobby Talk Radio. I would like to thank our special guest, City Wren, for coming on and listening to us dither and
also dather.
It was definitely a learning experience.
No one ever more than you bargained for.
Exactly.
Deal's getting worse all the time.
And I want you to ride this unicycle and refer to yourself as Mary.
But on behalf of myself, Thaxos, Frost, and Pinocchio, thank everybody for listening, and tune in again next month. Have a good one.
Later.
Bye.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.
Yay.
All right.
I was waiting for some more Ewok talk, so that's what I'm here for.
Yep. God damn it, we're nerds.
Yes, we are.
Next.
At least you're not in denial.
Oh, hell no.
True facts about the Star Wars nerd.